And we head now to the Brown and Crouppen celebrity line, and we bring in our buddy, voice of the Cardinals on Fox Sports Midwest, and our teammate right here at 101 ESPN, Dan McLaughlin. Danny Mac, how you doing, man?
I am doing well. I'm hunkered down, trying to be safe, and let's hope at some point we're talking a little baseball.
Hey, Dan, did you get to celebrate at all for your birthday? Happy belated.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was one I'm not going to forget.
Did you have seven or eight of your closest friends nearby?
No. I was self-quarantined, so I've been just hunkering down.
All right.
Not that I'm sick. I don't have any of the issues or ailments that maybe some people across the country are dealing with, but I'm just trying to adhere to what our leaders are telling us and to make sure I have social distance.
It's not a bad thing to do. We've got social distance in the studio right now, Dan. We have changed our seating arrangement a little bit. No Randy today, so it's a little bit easier to spread out. But we've got me.
What are you saying about Randy?
I'm saying that that's one more body that would be in this small studio.
Well, you said it was easier now.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Don't turn me into a sizist, okay?
You could have taken it the wrong way. I mean, I think maybe probably some people did. I didn't, of course. I wouldn't look at it that way because usually you're very straightforward in your approach in interviews, questioning, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, I thought there was just a modicum, little bit of sarcasm with that.
Yeah. I'd rather you not throw big words at me on a Friday also with your mom.
Sorry, buddy.
Anyways. Hey, how long were you down in Florida, Dan, after they canceled things? I know we talked to you last week after the very eerie final spring training game, but how long were you around afterwards? And I have to imagine those were kind of weird days.
They were. I go back. I just got back on Wednesday, so I was going to take a family vacation down there. We felt, though, that we just needed to get back home and, like I said, kind of hunker down and just get to our spot, which is where we're most comfortable, which is home. So I came back on Wednesday. It was really odd, man. I mean, it was just I will go back to that game as one that I'll never forget, that Thursday. I didn't really feel comfortable leading up to that first pitch, to be quite honest with you, especially with everything that had gone on the night before with Rudy Gobert, and we were seeing the tournament shut down across the college postseason. And I remember just sitting in there, and you know how it is, Ron and Brad. I mean, you know that lunchroom that's right there, and all the scouts are there and media, and it was so quiet. And I was watching one of the college commissioners, I think it was the ACC, address the crowd and say, you know, we're canceling this. And they were live on the air. He's in the middle of the floor. The teams are on the floor. And it was just something I'm not going to forget. And I just started wondering, why are we here? But we did go through with the game. And I waited for players to come out. It was 10 or 15 minutes, 20 minutes maybe before the first pitch. They trickled out onto the field, just a handful of them. And, you know, the buzz was, when are we going to stop, you know, and is baseball the next one in line? They had been kind of the last one of the four, five major professional sports to say, we're shutting it down for a bit, and they hadn't done that yet. So I was just kind of waiting for that word. I thought it would happen before the first pitch. It didn't. And then during the game, I just kept checking my phone and social media to see what people were saying, what the writers were saying, those in the know, those are the national writers that usually get a lot of that stuff first, out of New York or out of the major league offices. And I was just waiting for it, you know, like what's the deal? And then in between innings and commercial breaks, asking people like, what are you hearing? What's going on? And the crowd was subdued. I think they felt something was coming. I would imagine the players probably knew. And it was just eerie. It was just very, very odd, very strange. And it's a game I'll never, ever forget doing.
Well, the good news is, Dan, it hasn't gotten any weirder since then.
Yeah, well, there's some things going on.
Yeah.
And we just keep going. Just got to keep living, man.
So what do you do with yourself right now? I know you've got a family, you've got other people in the house, but what are you doing to kill time otherwise? Are you able to have a moment in Netflix or something?
At night I do. Right now, you know, to be quite honest with you, as I try to do anytime I'm on with you guys, and I mean that, I have a side business. You know, I've got ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. I have a couple of employees that have been unbelievable that work for me. And, you know, I just try to make sure that they feel comfortable. and assure them that we move forward with what we're doing, and then look at ways to provide content. And I think there's a lot of different ways, and I'm sure you guys are figuring this out, doing sports 24/7. With me, it's just a website and trying to funnel in content, even though there's no games. But there's still plenty of stories that can be talked about, discussed, features to be done, writing to be done. I have done a ton of thinking about what the game may look like if and when, notice I said if, Major League Baseball comes back this year and what they might do. Fielded a lot of phone calls, to be quite honest with you, from counterparts in the business, from what I do. You know, it's anxious times for everybody. And many of my counterparts, including myself, we are paid per game. So there are no games. What are you hearing? What are we going to do? Are there other things that we could be doing to, you know, try to enhance our standing with the various platforms that we have? So those are things, honestly, Ron, that I do. And I think a lot of people, a lot of small business owners are probably doing the same thing, maybe not on the level that I'm doing it with looking for content, but they're trying to keep their doors open. And so that's what I do. I try to be much more than just a guy that calls baseball games. Try to keep my hand in a lot of charities here in town and visit with a lot of different people, which I've been doing and catching up on that since I had not been home since February 7th. So I've been on the phone a lot, got here late Wednesday, so spent a lot of my day yesterday on the phone and doing so again. Didn't sleep all that much last night, got four little kids, want to make sure they're okay, and my wife, and trying to spend, I'm going to turn this into a positive as much as I can. I'm not going to sit there and live in the past and say, well, this should have been done, and that should have been done, and this should have been done. My efforts going forward of what my little piece of the pie is to move this thing forward, and what can I do to try to prevent, and what can I do to be better coming out of this? And that's the way I approach it.
In talking to your counterparts across the country, what's the consensus or the sense that you get from them of whether or not this is going to happen this year, the 2020 season is going to happen?
Great question. Some are very, very positive that we will have baseball in some form, fashion, whatever that may be. Reduced schedule, a schedule that takes us into maybe December, elimination of an all-star game, looking at neutral sites for postseason play because you could play in dome stadiums, you could play in warm weather areas, doubleheaders, crunching those games. If and when the teams come back and they will have to have a spring training, you won't be able just to roll the ball out and say, go get them. What does that look like? And then by extension, what does a roster look like? Because you're going to have to protect your pitchers. It's been interesting. I think some believe that we'll be back sooner than later, and others do not. Others feel it's kind of been split 50-50. Some feel that we will. They all feel that at some point we will have games. I think we all differ on how that may look, if that makes sense. Some guys are saying, I think we'll be back by June. Other guys are saying, I think we'll be back by July or August. And if it's July, this is what a schedule could look like. And this is how a doubleheader could be. Or this is how you do rosters. And will players accept service time in a certain manner? And what are major league teams thinking? And as it pertains to putting on games, what does it mean for the networks and television? All those things have to be figured out. I can't imagine, and I will say this, I've heard from multiple people down at the Cardinals, and John Mozeliak reached out to me the other day just to wish me a happy birthday, and I'm friends with John. John's a good man. You know, I don't always agree with everything he does and roster decisions, and he probably doesn't agree with everything I say on the air. It doesn't matter. We're friends. We're colleagues. That's part of being in sports. But I've heard from multiple people down there saying he has taken on a tremendous leadership role in this behind the scenes, checking in on his people, not just players, but those that are in baseball ops and other parts of the business of the Cardinals, and has taken a leadership role with Major League Baseball, too, and trying to advance what they can do. Because it's a very, very, in my opinion, and maybe it's not, but maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's very, very sticky. It's a very complicated situation that, let's say you have an arbitrary date of July 1st to come back. I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't know if that would be it. I have no idea. But what does that mean for a player? What does that mean for service time? What does that mean for minor leagues? Do you have a draft? What does it mean for college players and college coaches? I mean, I was talking to a guy yesterday that makes his living dealing with amateur players, and he said it is unbelievable what the kind of calls that he is fielding, and this is just baseball, but the kind of calls that he's fielding to figure out what to do with amateur players. Are they going to get another year of eligibility? Are there two different drafts? I mean, all those things are going into play. No one is out scouting. Everybody was pulled off the road, and there's no games being played. If you had a draft, how would it look? I mean, it's my point is, what I'm trying to say, there's a lot of opinions to your original question, but there's so many tentacles that go into this. It's very complicated, and I would think, though, the bottom line is that if and when we come back to play, that they would figure those things out and make sure that the number one thing that they do, that cooler heads prevail with the money and the service time and all those things, free agency, whatever. But the number one thing is we need to get back on the field for the American people, because baseball can be part of the healing process of what we're going to have to go through as a country.
I totally agree. And Dan, there are so many, you mentioned all the different tentacles. Look, I want to hit on a bunch of these with you. The service time one is so interesting. And I know fans don't care about it as much, to your point. They just want to see baseball. They want
to see baseball.
Yes.
Right.
So many, there are thousands of things that we are losing out on because of this. Some hugely important, some not so important. One of the things that I've been thinking about, though, is the spring that Dylan Carlson had been having, and the fact there were still another 2-3 weeks of it left to go with an opportunity to make the roster if he continued doing what he was doing. And that's a thing we're getting deprived of, is the resolution of that, finding out if he would have forced their hand to make sure he was on that 25 or 26 man to start the season.
Well, I'll say this, too. I don't know if he would have made it. Only John Mozeliak and Mike Shildt and, you know, those guys know. And I don't know if they knew at that point, because Dylan could have forced his way onto the roster just by his play. Or if somebody got hurt, he would have been the guy probably coming up. I do find it fascinating going forward that, let's just say you come back and you're going to try to get as many games as you can in a short amount of time. That would probably mean multiple doubleheaders a week, probably two a week, just to try to make up games. And players are going to want to get paid, as we talked about before, and owners are going to want games on television, and they're going to want people in the seats if they can. So to the point, what I'm about to say is, I think the Cardinals are going to, if and when it comes out of it, they're going to be one of the best-equipped teams to handle this from a pitching side. And I'll get to Dylan Carlson in just a moment. Because they have so much depth with their pitching staff. There are going to be guys that went to the minor leagues that on other teams would have been in their starting rotation and could have been a 3 or a 4 or a 5. And they would have been maybe the 1, the 2, or the 3 at Memphis, just because the Cardinals have very good pitching depth. So if you're playing those kind of games and having multiple games and not a lot of off days, you're going to have to fit in an off day here or there. I mean, guys are going to need a break. But that means that you have rosters that I would think when you come back would have not just 13 pitchers, but you're talking about maybe 17 or 18. And maybe you have a healthy scratch like hockey does. So, for instance, for an example, it would be like Wainwright going on a Monday. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he's your quote-unquote healthy scratch. You add another pitcher. That's a job for the union. They're going to like that. And he comes back on Saturday and pitches, especially initially. Now, how does that pertain to position players? If you have multiple doubleheaders, you just can't be playing guys every single game. It just can't happen. What does that mean for Dylan Carlson? I don't know. I've thought about this the same way that you're bringing this up to me. Does that mean that Dylan Carlson is one of the guys that comes north? I don't know. Could be. It all depends on roster construction. And maybe you guys can add to this, and maybe you think I'm crazy, but that's something you have to look at. I mean, Edmundo Sosa got sent down yesterday in one of the moves to the minor leagues. Well, he was having as good a camp that was under the radar as anybody, in my opinion, in that camp. I mean, it was really good. He can play multiple infield positions. Well, how valuable is that in that type of roster spot moving forward in this unknown world that we may have in baseball? It's something to think about. So I think baseball is going to have to get creative in that regard with their rosters. And I would hope, and I don't know if this is going to be the case, because this, again, is part of the business side of this. But I think this is a chance for them to get creative, too. I think it's depending on how we can travel as a country, depending on how you set up schedules. And again, all this is just stuff that I've just been thinking about. You know, we don't know what it's going to look like, but why not a pitch clock? It's got to be something that you bargain with the union. But if we want to speed up games, is pitch clock something we do instead of a three-batter minimum? Because three-batter minimum for guys that really aren't ready at the beginning of the season is probably not healthy for a reliever. Is that something you look at? Some of the various things that we're talking about in the game, I think you have a chance to be very creative with it. I think you have a chance to be very creative with your postseason, potentially, and maybe make it available for more teams so more's on the line at the end of the year. I think you look at that. Are we doing something with 1 year, just 1 year, that's geographical with divisions or leagues? I don't know, because we don't know about travel. We don't know how this is going to work. Maybe that's something you look at. Are some of these series going to be more than just three games? Are you looking at four or five-game series so you limit some of the travel? I think that's on the table. I don't know if you guys agree with any of this, but I just think it's something you can have a lot of fun with and say, look, we're coming back better than ever. We're going to try some things out, but this is, you know what the bottom line is for us as baseball? We are here to entertain you. We are here to be a diversion. We are back on the field, and we're going to make this, by God, as entertaining as we possibly can. And this is the time to do it.
You know, Dan, there are very few things right now when it comes to anything, whether it's this, whether it's hockey, that I would say no to, as long as they can. Exactly. If there's a way for them to get back, because I remember just a couple of weeks ago when we were tossing around the idea, because we had heard they were considering playing games with nobody in the crowd and how stupid everybody thought that was. Man, I would take that in a minute right now if it was the safe and right thing to do, just so we could have something to watch and something to be excited about.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. You know, I've been thinking about that a lot because it's beyond just, to me at least, and by no means am I an expert on this stuff, and by no means am I right or wrong, and I'm sure there's people that are listening or driving around and saying I'm crazy on some of these things, or maybe I agree with you, but I think the one thing I'd be concerned about, if you're not allowed a crowd because of big gatherings, understood. But then what happens, though, if a player is diagnosed with it, right? What if they catch that? And then you have to shut down that team. That team was in contact with that team and that umpire, and then that umpire is going to this particular series. You know what I'm saying? It's got a trickle-down effect. I just don't know how that would work. And I'm sure there's ways maybe at that point to get around it and to have proper testing and keep everybody safe. I just don't know. But to the greater point that you're making, Ranj, is I'm with you. I mean, if you can figure out a way to get on the field, no matter what it looks like, it's important. You know, you look at what the role of baseball, and this is an important time for baseball. It's an important time for everything in our country. And believe me, sports is the last thing people should be thinking about. But it is such an important part of our culture, especially in St. Louis, a sports-crazed city. It's at the forefront of a lot of things that we do for our entertainment. I've been thinking a lot about this. You know, baseball, it's losing its grasp on some of the younger generation. I think we're all, the numbers don't lie. That's what it says. And baseball played such a massive role in people coming back from World Wars. And I think about baseball. I was there at 9/11. I was with the team in Milwaukee. I was there the day that Jack Buck made his incredible speech to the crowd when we returned to Busch Stadium. And I know the role that the sport played. And I understand that maybe it's not quite as popular as it once was, but it's pretty damn popular. It's pretty damn big still. And it means a lot to a lot of people. And maybe baseball looks at this as a great way to engage, again, the younger audience. And they say, gosh, I haven't been able to watch anything, and now baseball is back. And who knows? We don't know what's going on with the NBA, the NHL. And football won't be in full swing until the end of the summer with training camps, and games won't mean anything until September. So this is your chance to captivate the audience, to captivate the nation, and to be a sport that comes back when you're the only one going, for the most part, but and say, we have a chance to really do something special here. And I would think that baseball is thinking along those lines that I'm talking about right now.
I would hope so. Dan, the 2 days ago, I was flipping through the channels. You know, I was bored. Usually there's sports on. But lo and behold, there was sports on. I went to Fox Sports Midwest, and we were replaying the opener in Milwaukee last year. So I get to hear your dulcet tones, and then I was there with you, which I was excited about.
You were great on that series,
Thank
too,
you
by the
so
way.
Much, Dan. I appreciate you saying that. You Checks bet. In the mail. But it got us thinking around here yesterday. We asked our listeners for if they had one Cardinal game that they could go back and rewatch, what game would it be? Now, for our purposes
last
yesterday,
year or just
no,
in general.
And for our purposes, we threw out Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, said you can't pick that one because okay. We thought everybody would pick that one. So I want to ask you, Dan, you had the one game to relive, and this could be a special moment for you, it could be a special moment for a player, and look, you probably have a handful of these that you can go to, but do you have one that's top of mind?
I'd have to say Go Crazy Folks would be there. I'm sure you probably got a lot of those. Am
yes,
I right?
We did. We got the Go Crazy Folks. We got the Lidge and Pujols. We got a few of those.
Yeah, but now does it have to be a home game like at Busch Stadium?
No. Any Cardinal game.
Any Cardinal game. Well, give me a second here.
You're fine. Out. You know one okay. that I was thinking about for you, and we got this one text in quite a bit.
I'm thinking out loud. I'm trying to really think about this.
Hey, Dan, I don't know if you know this. We have nothing but time. But we got yesterday, and I was thinking about you with this one, was Matt Holliday. It was his second-to-last game of him hitting the home run. We knew how much pain he was in. That was a special one.
That one was already on my list. That one, from my perspective as being a broadcaster, so I can talk long here. I don't need to
go ahead.
Go crazy. Okay. Go crazy, Dan. Go crazy.
I love it. That one, from a broadcaster's perspective, for me personally, was really special. I've said this before. It's my favorite call I've ever made, and it was because of the guy that did it. And for people that don't know, at that time, they were trying to find a way. They were still mathematically alive, the Cardinals were. And Mike Matheny was trying to find a way to give Matt Holliday a proper send-off. And not many people knew. I mean, there are very few people knew that it was starting to kind of trickle out just a little bit for those of us that are around. But the Cardinals were not – I think there was an option on his contract. They were not going to pick it up. So this was it. And so they're trying to figure out, like, okay, the games mean something. The guy hasn't been in a live game for whatever it was, 4 or 5 weeks, barely has taken BP. You know, what do we do to get him a proper send-off? So do we have him pinch run? Okay, that's an option. Do we have him go out to left field and no one else go out and then get a standing O? That's an option. But yet we're still in the competition of things, and you can't throw a game. You know, not throw a game, but you know what I mean. You gotta put your best foot forward. Yeah, better not say throw it.
No,
Pete Rose here. Okay,
yeah,
so, Pete Rose didn't do that either.
With all due respect.
Allegedly.
So, they have that big lead on a Friday night, and he comes to the plate, and I got goosebumps right now thinking about it, and everybody in the ballpark starts going nuts, and you can see the tears rolling down his cheeks. And he digs into the box and takes a couple of cuts. And you just see his timing is not right. It's not Matt Holliday. And all of a sudden, he pops that home run. And I got goosebumps going up and down my leg and my spine right now. And all I could think, it meant so much to me because I got to know Matt. I still correspond with Matt and text and visit every once in a while. And I love the guy. He's one of my favorite all-time athletes. And the reason why is he did a ton in this town, a ton of charity that no one ever, ever, ever knew. And I'll give you an example. I was doing a cancer night that I do every year for the National Children's Cancer Society, and we highlight a kid every time to show a video at the fundraiser to try to show what the NCCS is doing for these families. And so the kid and his father pull me aside and say, Mike's favorite player is Matt Holliday. I go, well, get in line, right? I mean, that's great. I mean, Matt's got a lot of favorite players. I said, that's awesome. Do you ever meet him? And he said, oh, yeah, I've met him multiple times. I said, really? I said, you've been down to the ballpark? I know you've been, you know, really sick. He said, no, he comes and sees me after games. He comes and brings me his bats and his gloves. And one day he told me he was going to hit a home run for me, and no one knew this publicly, and he hit a home run for me and sent members of the Cardinals to go get the ball for me.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I had asked him if he would hit a home run for me that night. And I'm getting emotional thinking about it because we're in a time right now where you think about people doing good deeds. And he did that all the time. I mean, all the time. So when he hit that home run, it was finally, I thought, just like the adulation all for him. This was our town saying thank you to a guy that, yeah, you made a lot of money here. You got a lifetime of a deal, but you played hard. You did the right thing. You represented yourself, your family, the organization, the city in the highest regard. You did it with class. And to see a guy have that kind of moment is something you never, ever forget. And I was just so happy for him that night. It's one that I don't get very emotional. I just don't. I'm just not that kind of guy, even though I'm kind of thinking about it now and misty-eyed a little bit. But I was so happy for him to have that moment. And I'll be honest with you, last year, now you're getting me thinking about things. Last year when Pujols hit that home run, that was emotional for me. And I don't know, and I hadn't been emotional the entire weekend. I thought, this is cool. He's coming back. Fans are getting the chance to see him. But when he hit that home run, and I just was like, oh, my God, he did it. He did it. I'm getting goosebumps again thinking about this. And I just made the call. I think the call was something like he gave us 11 years of memories we'll never forget, and he's just given us another. I don't know why I said that. I just did.
It was
and
perfect.
I didn't say a word. I did not say a word for the next 3 minutes. And the crowd was going ballistic. Ballistic. And the guy I felt sorry for, by the way, was Dakota Hudson, who pitched his butt off, and he was over 100 pitches and won the game and did his job and did great. But I was flooded with memories that I had not been thinking about, even when he stepped on the field the night before. I was flooded with memories in those 3 minutes. I don't know why. I remember being at his first game. I remember calling his first hit. I remember calling his first home run. I remember calling number 400 in Washington. I remember calling it hit number 2,000 against the, of all people, the Chicago Cubs. He hit it down the left field line. And I remember the guys that he joined that did it in Cardinals history. And I was like, this is amazing. All these things started coming back to me. And I thought, in a way, I've been the soundtrack of his summers for Cardinal fans. And I know this sounds self-serving, and I don't mean it to be, but he's given me so many memories to be a soundtrack of, and I'm thankful for that. I was like, thanks. Thank you for doing what you did. All the great things you did in our town, I'm so appreciative because I love this place, as people know. But, man, from a baseball perspective, you delivered, and you delivered all the time. That's a game I'll never forget in a moment, even though it's recent. I think one of the greatest memories I've ever had in the booth was working opening day with – am I going too long here?
No,
Dan, not at
you
all.
You got this. Okay. Are you going to say me?
Well, I love working with you, and we will have an opening day.
Yeah.
So we were supposed to do it this year again. But opening day at home is always special for me. And I don't talk about my dad very much. We had kind of a complicated relationship at the end of his life, which he's been – passed away for over 2 decades. But the one thing we did have was sports, and that's why the Blues run brought back so many memories to me, because he would always say to me, God rest his soul, he would always say, and I'll get back to opening day here in a second, he would get so mad, okay? He loved the Blues. I mean, loved them. He would get so mad in postseason play, he would call them every name in the book.
I love it.
I'm like 8, 9 years old, and
yes.
He is... I mean, the worst names that you can think about that you can't say on radio, he's saying them and would spit at the TV.
You got to learn somehow.
One time he ripped the TV out of his socket. He was so upset. Okay? He loved hockey. I loved baseball. I enjoyed. I love hockey too. I love the sport. But the run the Blues made last year was just, it brought back great memories of my father. So opening day, baseball to me was always me and my dad. He took me to my first game. I remember being there. I'll never forget being there. He did two things for me I'll never forget. One day it was a hot day, and it was blistering hot at the Old Busch Stadium. And Alan Watson started out like 5-0 one year. Remember Alan Watson, the left-hander?
Yeah.
And I was like, Dad, this guy's really good. He's really good. He goes, okay. And we grew up in South St. Louis, didn't have a lot of money, but he found a way to get me tickets to watch him warm up in the bullpen and see up front. And we left after like two innings because even I, as a young kid in great shape, was about to pass out. So we had our hot dogs, had our soda, but I got to watch him warm up. And he one time got at the old ballpark, the umpires used to come from behind home plate and go underneath the stands, and that's where the umpires' room was. And that's where the equipment was, that's where the football Cardinals kept equipment, all this stuff. We had seats right behind home plate one time. And he knew Jerry Davis, who's a longtime umpire in Major League Baseball. Brad, you probably know Jerry Davis. You probably have had him on the field. And Jerry Davis, after the game, Bruce Sutter saved the game, said, Dan, how you doing? And my eyes lit up. I'm fine. I'm like, oh, my God. And he flipped me the ball. He flipped me the ball from the game. And it's still a ball that I have. A game-used ball from Bruce Sutter that won the game. And Jerry Davis somehow had the ball. And I have it. And it's something I'll never, ever forget. The littlest things you think about that make you think about that. I was there, George Foster, that same day. There was a little hole behind the screen, hits a BB. I mean, he just missed it. It comes straight back, and one of the grounds crew guys is sitting right in front of me that day, hits his chest, and all he does is go, oh, and the thing just drops right down into his lap and goes, here you go, like that. So I got those two baseballs from that night. Opening day. So I'm working with Tim McCarver. This is probably 2 or 3 years ago. It's opening day, Busch Stadium, and Lou Brock had been in poor health. And he was touch and go. People didn't know if he was going to be, you know, with us. And Lou Brock not only is there on opening day, he's in remission, but he walks without his walker out to his spot with the Red Jackets. And I look over at Tim McCarver, and it had to be before he was in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, because if not, he would have been down on the field. And he's crying. And he's like, that's my guy down there, you know. And here he is walking, and and people know Lou's leg had been amputated, part of it. And he ditched the walker and walked out to his spot to stand to greet the players. All I could think about was my dad. Those guys were my dad's guys growing up. I mean, 64, 67, 68, and those great teams. And I looked over at Tim McCarver, and there he is bawling. And I get like that now more so than ever on opening days. They're my favorite. I absolutely love opening day at home. I don't care if the team is going to be terrible or if they're going to be world beaters. I don't care. It's opening day in St. Louis. It's different, and it makes me think of my dad. And so those are the games that stand out for me.
Dan, you are the best, man. And those are great. And hearing you tell those stories, and you mentioned the word goosebumps a couple of times, man, that makes everybody hungry for baseball. We appreciate it. We know we've taken up your time. I know you're busy over at Scoops with Danny Mac. We're going to check all of that stuff out. But can't wait to catch up with you again next week. And we wish all the best to you and your family, Danny.
I didn't mean anything I just said. I was lying about it all.
No, I know. No, you're pretty good at that.
I don't believe you.
You're the best.
Yeah,
you try to play that cold, calculated guy, but you got the feels.
I got the feels.
You
I
got
can't
the
help
feels.
It.
It happens. Danny, you're the best, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Don't spit at your TV, though. Don't do that. That's not advised.
No.
You can yell at your TV. Just don't spit.
Yeah, well, especially right now with social distancing and stuff.
And don't pull your TV off the wall because you can't go anywhere to buy a new one.
Well, that's the other. It was funny though. The TV did work after that. It was a black and white TV. It did work
it.
After that.
I love
those things. Can take a beating.
Love it.
He was pissed every
Dude,
April.
My grandfather, big Bears fan. Well, you know, was until he died. But his doctor told him, because he started to develop heart problems, and his doctor told him, he's like, you got to quit watching football. You got to quit, and so he quit. But he used to be a maniac on Sunday. a maniac.
Well, so I'll make this real quick. So the guys that work in on our games, guys and gals, they work the Blues games as well. And so this whole Blues run, I always would say what my dad would say. I go, you guys are getting too invested. They'll break your heart. Don't get too invested. They'll break your heart. And then the Stanley
Cup. You told me that.
That's what Randy said, too.
The Stanley Cup final came around, and I'm not watching the game, supposed to do play-by-play. I'm watching the TV to my left, which is the hockey games against the Bruins, and I'm into it. And they're like, oh, I thought they were going to break your heart. I'm like, shut up. I'm watching the game. I'm into this.
We're back, baby.
Hey,
sports are the best, man.
I thought that playoff run was over 8 different times. So
everybody did.
Yeah.
If you weren't a true Blues fan unless you felt that way.
8 times.
And
minimum.
Now I'm looking at a picture I have framed with the Stanley Cup in the booth with me kissing it and Rick Horton next to me and me not kissing him.
Well, that was probably
that's
safe.
That's good. I mean,
well, I'm just giving you the visual. We were doing the stand-up with the Stanley Cup between us.
He probably didn't want that.
Well, hey.
But I think it would have been friendly.
That could have been the next one in the camera roll, though. We don't know.
Especially
we're
now.
We're practicing social distancing.
Yeah, right.
Even then.
Stayed the hell away.
Yeah. We weren't going to do that.
Hey, are we ever going to go back to handshakes?
I don't know. I was thinking, that's a great question that actually I was thinking of abstaining from. Of handshakes. I think I might
forever?
Just do the elbows.
I'm good with never going back to handshakes ever again.
Well, I do think when we all come out of this, we will be a society that will take hygiene seriously.
For a while.
I think we will. I think we will totally change our routines. I really do.
Dan,
probably
I'm
not after this.
I'm a hugger, though, Dan.
Well, you're not going to do it to me.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kick you.
Oh, yes. Let me know when that's going to happen.
Dan, I can't wait, man. You are the best. We got so many text messages, by the way, just saying thank you for sharing. Somebody just said, tell Dan thanks. I'm crying my eyes out driving home from work right now. You are the best, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a great weekend. Be safe, and we'll talk to you guys on Monday.
You do the same. That is Danny Mac. Go check out his work. He's always busy. Scoopswithdannymac.com. All right, coming up next, we're going to shift gears, talk a little NFL with the professor, John Clayton.